Well, good morning. I'd like to welcome all of you to the spring semester and also wish you a happy new year. Hope that everyone had a wonderful holiday season, that you got lots of family time and face time, that you feel well rested and well restored. I know if it's in your family like it is around the Jones household, I know it seems like we spend months and months preparing for Christmas, and then in the blink of an eye, it's all over, except for the credit card bills, of course. But I hope that the spirit of the season stays with you, that sense of thankfulness and grace that I know all of us experience over the holidays, and that's something that can really carry us throughout the year. I'd like to begin today with a pair of very special remembrances. Within the last month, the Lyons family has been diminished by the loss of two of its stalwarts, Mr. W. Garland Button and Mr. Raymond Cameron. And I know that some of you knew these gentlemen personally, and many more of you knew them through reputation and through legend. Mr. W. Garland Button was born on December 1st, 1918, and he passed away on December 7th, 2011. He will be remembered as a pillar of all that is good at A&M Commerce. His ties to the university span more than 70 years. He graduated in 1938 with a degree in education and taught for several years as a public school teacher. He then joined Texas Power and Light Company as a clerk, where he eventually rose to the second highest position, executive vice president for operations and a member of the board of directors. His leadership and service to the university spanned more than 50 years and six presidents, which he often reminded me of. He served proudly on the ETSU Board of Regents. He was a distinguished alumnus and served as president of the ETSU Alumni Association. It was Mr. Button that we have to thank for ETSU achieving university status. Before then, it had been a state teachers' college. He also assisted the university in its efforts to retain its doctoral programs at a time when the university was under great pressure to renounce those programs. He convinced the Texas legislature that ETSU would be best served through the establishment of a separate Board of Regents in the late 60s. His service was so extensive, in fact, that one could easily believe that higher education was his first love. That honor, however, belonged to his wife, Margaret, class of 1939. When Margaret was diagnosed first with breast cancer in 1999 and then later with dementia-like disease in 2002, Garland Button began what he described as the long goodbye. Last month, we at A&M Commerce began our own long goodbye to Mr. Button. Although he has gone, the legacy and love for his alma mater lives on. How does one begin to say goodbye to such a bedrock of an institution as Mr. Button? On behalf of the A&M Commerce community, I'd like to think that our goodbye to Mr. Button begins and ends with a simple thank you. Mr. Raymond B. Cameron, born September 1st, 1919, and passed away January 5th, 2012. Many of the same sentiments can be said about another fine alumnus of this university, Mr. Raymond B. Cameron, class of 1940. After proudly serving his country in World War II, Mr. Cameron embarked on a successful career in real estate development as the co-owner of the Cameron Company of Rockwall, professionals in investment properties. He and his firm were responsible for developing many of the residential and commercial subdivisions that have shaped the landscape of Rockwall in recent years. A man intimately connected to his community, Mr. Cameron spent more than 30 years serving the citizens of Rockwall as president of the Chamber of Commerce. He also served on the school board and Rotary Club and as a member of the city council. He served his local Methodist church in capacities ranging from Sunday school teacher to district lay leader, district trustee, and commissioner of the Methodist home in Waco. Like Button, however, some of Mr. Cameron's proudest moments of service were spent bettering the future of his alma mater. He served as president of the ETSU Alumni Association from 1965 to 66, and he was later honored by the Dallas County Chapter with a special award recognizing his service to the university and to the association. In 1977, Mr. Cameron was named to the board of directors of East Texas State University Foundation. In 1978, he was bestowed the university's highest honor, that of distinguished alumnus. Altogether, Mr. Cameron's life, career, faith, and family earned him the admiration and respect of all who knew him, and now, in his absence, the respect and admiration of an entire university community. Two great men, Mr. W. Garland Button and Mr. Raymond Cameron. And although not all of you knew them personally, I can assure you that they shaped the institution that now defines so much of our professional lives. At this point, I'd like to call upon Dr. Lavelle Hendricks for a special presentation.
Thank you, Mr. President, to our administration, to our wonderful faculty, to our staff, and to our outstanding students. On behalf of the Faculty Senate, we have a special presentation we would like to make this morning. This individual works tirelessly in the office of the Joe B. Hinton International Studies Program. He works with our students in sending them abroad to study in various countries. Each semester, the Faculty Senate would like to pay special recognition to an individual for their worth and their value here at the university. On behalf of the Faculty Senate and the President-elect, Dr. Daryl Harp, we would like to call Dr. Lawrence Rock Clinton to the podium, please.
Dr. Clinton, we are proud as Faculty Senate to work with people that demonstrate the dedication and the perseverance that it takes to succeed here at Texas A&M Commerce.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Congratulations, Rock Clinton, and thank you for all that you do for our university and, more importantly, for the students that we serve. Well, at this time, I'd like to turn to what I call the Institutional Weather Report. And I am very pleased to report today that all indications are for a less stormy forecast than I brought you a year ago at this time. Those of you who were here in the room last January, 12 months ago, will recall a pretty unsettling state of affairs. The 82nd Texas Legislature, which convened a few days after we met, was facing a daunting task. It had to fulfill its constitutional obligation to write a balanced budget despite a statewide revenue shortfall that some had estimated to be as high as $27 billion. Once the session began, it became clear just how ugly things were going to get. Emotions ran high in Austin. The search for solutions turned into a search for blame. And as you know, the search for blame is always successful but seldom productive. State-funded institutions such as ours were cast as wasteful and inefficient and were repeatedly scolded for our supposed failure to control costs. I recall one particularly vexed legislative hearing when I was called upon to testify about our university's appropriations request. I began by outlining a variety of cost-saving measures that we had implemented here at A&M Commerce, and some of them were quite painful, including the elimination of 23 staff positions. About a minute into my very well-prepared and well-rehearsed testimony, the committee chair interrupted me, rather brusquely, I might add, and he wanted me to explain why we had not eliminated these 23 positions sooner. In fact, why did we have them at all? Because clearly, if we could get by without them now, we never should have funded them in the first place. Well, there's no good answer to that question. As I reported to you last fall, we did indeed experience significant reductions in our general revenue appropriations for the current biennium. Statewide, higher education was cut about $1 billion. For A&M Commerce, the reduction was approximately $5.3 million. However, tuition and fee revenue generated by our historic growth over the last 2 years has placed us in the very enviable position of being able to absorb these reductions without inflicting lasting damage to our university. Not only have we avoided the need for further staff reductions, at least for the time being, knock on wood, we have maintained an unbroken record of merit pay plans while adding more than 24 new faculty positions. I remain grateful to all of you who made this possible by adding classes, bumping up section sizes, teaching more sections, and working miracles every day to ensure that every qualified student got a seat. You are doing it again this spring. Thank you again and again for extending educational opportunity to our students. Our job, our mission, is to provide transforming experiences for every capable student who wants to unlock the door to his or her future through education. There is no job that is more important to the vitality of our region and of our world than what we are doing right here in Commerce, Texas. And there are more students in need of what we have to offer each and every day. I'll return to this theme of growth in a minute, because I believe that cultivating well-managed growth is both the greatest challenge and the most inspiring opportunity that we face as a university community. First, though, let me share with you the rest of the weather report. As you walk about campus, you've no doubt noticed that the pace of campus improvement continues unabated. At the end of the fall semester, we spent a portion of the funds generated through the increased parking fee to resurface the parking lot adjacent to the science building. Now, I know that parking is not sexy, it doesn't have sizzle, but it's important, and we will be doing more parking improvements in the coming months. Those of you who were on campus over the break saw the old music building coming down. In a few days, the last of the rubble will be gone, with the site to become a beautiful green space in the heart of campus. Its ultimate use will be considered as part of our facilities master planning process, which we will undertake later this spring. The Rawlings Memorial is near the field house. It's nearing completion. It now awaits only the installation of the bronze sculpture of a lioness and her cubs, expected later this spring. Also this spring, work will begin on the development of an open-air, bowl-style assembly and performance venue between the BA building and the post office. We are also preparing for a major new addition to the equine facility located on Highway 24, about 6 miles south of campus. Our equine program is one of this university's hidden jewels and has significant growth potential. We are in the heart of one of the most vibrant horse communities in the nation, and an expanded program to include a full-fledged equine science degree program would be a tremendous asset and a great attraction for students. We have set aside approximately $800,000 in capital improvement funds to erect a new arena, and we have also spoken with a number of prospective donors who we believe are interested in supporting the project with matching funds. Expect to hear more soon about this very exciting addition to our program and to our university. The next major addition to campus will be phase two of the residential living and learning community located at Culver and Highway 24. With approximately 550 beds, phase two will be more than twice the size of phase one, named Pride Rock by our students, and will move the university one step closer to achieving its goal of having 3,000 students in residence within the next 5 years. Under the guidance of the Texas A&M University System, proposals for private developers have been solicited and received and are now being evaluated. We expect to award a contract in the coming weeks, with construction to begin later this spring and occupancy by fall 2013. A proposal to update campus signage has recently been received from ASI Signage Innovations. With all of the changes on campus in the past few years, it's time for a whole new look. Accurate and attractive signage will show our students and visitors the way around campus and will also improve the overall look and feel of all of our university facilities. Final tweaks to the design will be made early in the spring semester, and we hope to have the new signage in place to greet students and their families to summer orientation programs. Enhancement of our technological capabilities continues to be a high priority, and our new CIO, Anwar Karim, has been busy assessing our systems, visiting with you, and setting projects in motion. One of these, which you will hear more about in the very near future, is the web portal project. Some of you know about this already through Anwar's steering committee. This will be a customer-driven redesign of our website that will enable all of our constituents, students, faculty, staff, administrators, alumni, and the general public to have quick access to customized content, processes, and functions. Anwar is working with the steering committee to plan the project, and he will be reporting on developments regularly. We also are enjoying a significant expansion of our bandwidth capacity this spring. A&M Commerce was the first university in the A&M system to benefit from the Broadband Technology Opportunity Project. This is a multi-million dollar federal era grant fund, funded through the system that has more than doubled the amount of available bandwidth serving our university. Another major expansion of our capacity has come about as the result of a renegotiation of our partnership with NetNet, the Northeast Texas Net Consortium, with which we have a long-standing relationship. Improved contracts with bandwidth providers have resulted in a significant expansion of our capabilities in this very important area of our academic and student life. Another big change in the IT area, it's really the entire university, is the project to transition to a new domain name. I think that most of you would agree that our current domain name, www.tamu-commerce.edu, is probably longer than it needs to be, and it's also not in keeping with the custom of most universities, including really all of our peers in the A&M University system, who simply use initials to stand for full place names. After researching what is required to make a domain name change and consulting with the university community, we have begun the process of adopting www.tamuc.edu as our new domain name. It's shorter, it's easier to remember, and it is consistent with industry standards. Making the change, however, involves a lot more than just throwing a switch. Our domain name appears in literally thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of places. It's on marketing materials, web pages, letterheads, business cards, and dozens of other official university documents and publications. Many of you use it in your professional lives to disseminate information about associations and events and to engage in forms of collaboration. So, the process of changing the domain name must be deliberate and well managed. The same principle applies to the change in our email protocol, which will accompany the domain name change. I'm sure that, like me, many of you have missed emails because of the underscore that we use to separate first and last names in our email addresses. When you send it out in an email, and it automatically is underlined, and the underscore disappears. The underscore will be replaced by a dot at the same time that the new domain name is adopted. So our new email addresses will look like this. It's simpler, it's easier to remember, and it's less confusing. Let me stress, this isn't going to happen later today. This is going to happen over a period of several months. Okay, we're going to have lots of time to adapt to this transition. And during the transition period, emails will be automatically forwarded from your old address to your new address so that you will not lose any correspondence. Technology services will be working closely with the entire university community to ensure a smooth transition. Technology has become, as all of you know, a critical and indispensable part of the academic enterprise. And today I'd like to acknowledge the recognition recently accorded one of our preeminent online degree programs. Among the top online graduate business programs noted in the latest U.S. News and World Report rankings is Texas A&M University Commerce, which comes in at number 5 in student engagement and accreditation. We are the only Texas university in the top 5. In the report, it is headed by these words: the most reputable online business programs are AACSB accredited and make it easy to communicate with classmates and instructors as professionals would in the business world. So my thanks go to Dean Hal Langford and everyone in the College of Business and Entrepreneurship for this great achievement. I'm also going to quit making fun of the U.S. News and World Report rankings. Okay, that will no longer appear in the speech. I'd now like to ask Provost Larry Lemansky to provide a quick update on the many faculty searches that are going on right now. Dr. Lemansky.
Thank you, Dr. Jones, and thank you all for being here. What I'd like to do, I'll just quickly go through the some of the searches, well, some of the recent hires that we've made in administrative position, and then talk a little bit about the searches that are going on in the various colleges. So the first slide, Dr. Roseanne Hogan, is that up there? Okay. Dr. Hogan has joined us just recently. Well, she'll be here January 17th as the Associate Provost for Institutional Effectiveness and Planning. She is coming from California, where she owned the leading Edge Company, Incorporated. She's a former Assistant Vice President at California State University, East Bay, and she's been involved as a professor and director of institutional research and strategic planning at the University of Kentucky, where she also got a PhD degree. What she'll be doing, she'll be upgrading and standardizing our institutional effectiveness and planning processes, and she will certainly as well play a major role in planning and preparing for the SAC's reaffirmation that'll be coming up very, very soon. Next, Richard Curry, and I think Richard, you're in the audience here. Why don't you stand up? Welcome, Richard. Thank you. Richard is the new proposal developer and grant writer. He'll be working with graduate studies, research and graduate studies. Joined us January 9th, coming from LMC Business and Consulting. He was formerly with UT Southwestern Medical Center, where he served as a management analyst in the psychiatry department, was involved in the preparation of a number of very successful, I might say, grant applications, and brought in very, very significant amounts of funding to the Southwestern Medical Center. And so we're delighted to have you, Richard. Again, welcome. The next individual is an individual who will be joining us in a few weeks as a distinguished visiting professor. It's Noah Nelson, and for those of you who were at the graduation ceremony, he was our commencement speaker for the fall 2011 commencement. He's a former NBC news anchor, public relations and communications professional. He is the top of his field. He won an Emmy for work at NBC. He does voiceovers now for television, movies, and video games, including serving as the voice for Toru. I think that's misspelled. And is he here? Noah Nelson, you're here? Could you stand up? I'm sorry, excuse me. Noah Nelson. I'm sorry. I thought you were joining us later. I'm delighted that you're here. He does Toru and Jackie Chan Adventures. He's a graduate of A&M Commerce. And again, we're delighted to have you here as well. If we could go to the faculty lines. This shows that there are 31 new faculty lines that were created at the university. And there are 25 existing faculty lines that are currently available to be filled. Now, five existing lines have recently been filled. So really, if you think about the new faculty hired, it will be more than 60 over this next, this 12-month period. We have 48 active searches going on right now, and there are some searches that are about to begin, so that number will go up further. If we could have the next slide. I'm not going to read each of these positions. This will be online, so you can look at them in a little more detail. But the College of Business and Entrepreneurship has 9 searches going on right now. Humanities, Social Sciences, and Art, 8 searches going on, and they're at the assistant associate professor level, most of them. There's a department head search going on in Humanities, Social Sciences, and Arts as well. Next slide, College of Education and Human Services. As you can see, there are 20 searches going on. Most of these for our existing lines. There are only one or two new lines, although the nursing program is also in that group. So you can see that we have an exciting time coming up in terms of these colleges. And finally, the College of Science, Engineering, and Agriculture. Again, there are 15 searches currently going on. Three of those are for department heads, so there's going to be some leadership changes in that college among those three departments. And like I say, it's an exciting time with new faculty, new colleagues about to come into the university. The other thing right now, because the university has been successful in increasing enrollment and maintaining funding so that we could have things like raises for our faculty, and that we can expand to accommodate the needs of the increasing enrollment, we've gotten a pretty good reputation around the country, and people are asking us, gee, are you going to have any faculty position openings at Texas A&M University Commerce? And we can certainly say, yes, we do have openings. And so I think we're going to be attracting a very sizable group in all of our searches of outstanding candidates, and so I think the next semester and the next year and the next years are going to be exciting times in terms of elevating the university really to the next level. So, like I say, I'm looking forward to the next semester, I'm looking forward to the next year, and I'm sure we're going to have a great future here at Texas A&M University Commerce.
Thank you, Dr. Lemansky. I don't know that I've ever been at a university that was trying to hire 60 new faculty members in 1 year, so I know a lot of you are on search committees. I commend you for your hard work. Those of you who haven't started working yet, get busy, okay, because it's going to be a pretty hectic semester. In this economy that we're in, which continues to be down, you know, your retirement account may not be looking all that good, but there are two things that are really bright spots. One is buying a house. It's never been a better time to buy a house, and it's never been a better time to run faculty searches because we are getting tremendous response in terms of quality and just sheer size. So thank you, Dr. Lemansky, for your leadership, and thank all of you for the tremendous time and effort that you're putting into these very important searches. I'd also like to commend Dr. Lemansky and everyone in the Division of Academic Affairs, as well as the Division of Student Access and Success, for the new advising system that they have been working on and plan to implement this spring. I'd like to ask Dr. Mary Hendricks, the Vice President for Student Access and Success, to come to the podium, describe the new advising system, and while she's up here, to talk a little bit about our spring enrollment numbers. Mary?
Thank you, Dr. Jones. Well, first, let me acknowledge Dr. Ricky Dobbs and the four academic deans for their work in really addressing an issue that has been plaguing our institution for many years, and that is, how do we improve student advising? Some of you may not be aware that this past legislative session, there was a bill passed that would require each institution to really focus on an advising plan and to do checks at 45 hours. Well, what our group has planned for our students for the fall, I think, is going to make a significant improvement in how we serve our students. So I'm just going to hit some of the highlights for you. One of the issues that we faced is how do we have consistency between University College and our academic colleges? And in the past, our success coaches were organized by alphabet. And so beginning in the fall, each success coach will be assigned to a specific college. And that will do a number of things. It will increase communication between the two colleges, as well as really allow each person to address issues he or she may be facing. We also will be having regular meetings between the two groups. One of the issues that we really face is developmental education. We face it as well as other institutions across the country. In the past, developmental education in English and math did not receive grades that would count toward the GPA. Well, you think about the logic of that. If I'm a student and I'm not getting a grade that's going to affect me, what is the incentive? So some changes are going to be made in the fall where developmental education course credit will be counted towards the GPA. Of course, we have to be, I think, as an institution, really focused on how can we ensure their success. And so there will be several strategies that will be put in place to address those. We're also going to be focusing on our first year, what we call gatekeeping courses, those courses with which students have such difficulty getting through, primarily in math. We're going to be looking at research-based strategies and how we can improve and help students advance through the sequence more quickly. I'd also like to announce that our degree works actually will go online mid-February, and we'd like to acknowledge the work of Marlena Cameron and her staff in getting that ready in record time. There also needs to be a standardized process for declaring and changing a major, and that will be implemented in the fall so that there is a one-stop place for students to go, and then that information will be shared online for all advisors so that we can keep track of that. The all departments will provide guides for 2 years that would be primarily targeted at transfer students, and four-year degree plans so that students know up front what the course requirements are. All departments will create and publish a three-year rotation, including days of the week and times for upper-level courses. This will allow students to begin planning and allow department heads and deans to be anticipating cost for many years. Now, things can change, we know that, but at least we have a commitment there of this is what the rotation will look like. Finally, all colleges will make annual reports of students' progress toward degree milestones, and these reports will be done at 30 hours, 60 hours, and 90 hours. This will allow us as an institution to look at overall, are our students making progress toward degree attainment? And as some of you are probably eagerly waiting, what is our enrollment? These are the figures as of 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon after our open orientation. Of course, we have international student orientation today, and we will be registering our core in students who are here, 149 of them, tomorrow. So this will show that what our increase is as far as headcount and our increase in credit hours. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Hendricks. Thank you for the report, and thank you for your leadership. As I was listening to the report, I was thinking that advising is kind of like gravity. It's not just a good idea. It's the law. So I do appreciate all that you do to help our university earn a reputation as a university that cares about its students and provides a high level of service. And by doing so, we're getting out in front of the law. We're doing not just what we have to do, but much, much more. I'd like to give a quick update on our international initiatives, which continue to grow. We are a global university. We now have graduated two cohorts of students from our EMBA program in Sarajevo, Bosnia, with the next graduation coming in June. We also will be graduating students from our cohorts in Belgrade, Serbia, and Rabat, Morocco, this spring. Dr. Lemansky, Dr. Clinton, and Dr. Langford and I just returned from a trip to India, where we met with prospective university and corporate partners to offer these and similar programs in this hugely important part of the world. And this week, the first of 149 Korean students, although I understand one's still at the airport somewhere, have begun arriving. I think they're all here now, from Konkuk University in Seoul, to embark upon their academic journey as lions. As you see these students around campus, and all of our international students, and all of our native students for that matter, please welcome them. While they will be benefiting from a tremendous educational opportunity, they are also helping us achieve our university priority of globalization. Well, as you can see from these incredible developments, growth is a major part of what defines the new normal of this university. We have talked often about the reasons for this growth: improved enrollment management practices, more targeted recruiting, strategic partnerships with school districts, community colleges, and business and civic organizations. All of these are important growth drivers. But high-quality growth is more than just a matter of strategy and technique. As we grow in size, we must also grow in quality. This university has made tremendous strides in building its reputation as a center of academic excellence, a destination for high-achieving students who want to realize their full academic potential. Some of you have been here long enough to remember a couple of decades ago when Old ET was known as Old EZT, and as such was a destination not for high-achieving students but for those who had nowhere else to go. Not surprisingly, these were years marked by enrollment declines and other signs of a troubled institution. Fortunately, those days are long gone, and A&M Commerce is now successfully competing for students who are entertaining offers not just from UNT and Stephen F. and Sam Houston, but offers from SMU and Rice and Stanford and Harvard, and they're choosing Texas A&M University Commerce. Thank you all for restoring this university to its rightful position as one of the preeminent comprehensive regional institutions in the Southwest. You did it by giving our students your best, your devotion to your discipline, your passion for excellence, your love of learning, and your high regard for all of those whom you teach and with those whom you associate. As we talk of buildings and campus improvements, let us never forget that you are Texas A&M University Commerce. I'd like to quickly share some facts and figures with you that will show that the growth we have experienced is not something that just happened. It is rather the most visible manifestation of an institution tracing a remarkable upward trajectory in response to profound demographic trends. First, let's take a look at those numbers that we spend so much time poring over, enrollment. Here's a chart that shows enrollment trends since the early 1960s. You'll notice that prior to fall 2010, our highest enrollment was recorded in fall of 1975, the year following the end of the Vietnam War. That year saw the return of thousands of veterans to classrooms across the nation, and including right here in Commerce. You'll also see that after that peak, our enrollment leveled off and then went through a series of uncertain upward and downward swings. Throughout the 80s and early 90s, the university faced significant challenges, which I won't detail here. Suffice it to say that weak enrollment was the sign of an institution that was struggling in many ways. Beginning in the mid-90s, when we entered the A&M system, enrollment began to stabilize, setting the stage for the remarkable growth that we have seen during the last 2 years. Let's consider for a moment how our affiliation with the system set in motion a series of transformations that have led us to where we are today. First, let's take a look at the growth in the overall university budget since 1996. I think you would agree that these are pretty remarkable numbers. Since 1998, which was the first budget prepared under the system directives, our annual budget has increased from a little over $64 million to a little over $140 million, a 120% increase. All right, now let's take a look at capital improvements to campus over that same period of time. It's been a busy 15 years for campus construction, with the total value of new projects coming in well over $140 million. Let me quickly point out that when we entered the system, the people in College Station did not start sending us checks. Okay, that's not the way that university budgets work in the state of Texas. What did happen, though, is that our university began to enjoy a level of political advocacy that we had never before experienced. Overnight, we became a member of a system serving more than 100,000 students in Texas and throughout the world, with additional services reaching every one of Texas's 254 counties. We became part of something bigger than ourselves, and decision makers began to take notice. We became part not just of what makes our region great, but part of what makes Texas great. And I'll tell a quick story to illustrate the point. On our recent trip to India, I was having trouble with my cell phone. So Dr. Langford and I were in the airport in Ahmedabad, India, and I called the Sprint International Services customer assistance line. And the person who answered was a graduate of Texas A&M University Commerce from 2002. So we ended our conversation with a hearty "Go Lions." Okay, a few more numbers. Look at the growth in the size of faculty and staff. With more students comes the need for more people to serve them. So you've seen tremendous growth in that area as well. New programs. Since 1996, we have added 26 new programs at bachelor's, master's, and doctoral levels. How about teaching sites? Take a look at our teaching centers in 1996 and where we are teaching today. A tremendous expansion, not just in commerce, not just in North and Central Texas, but throughout the world. Related to our efforts in globalization, let's take a look at the increase in the number of international students. This number has bumped up and down over the years, but is now showing a definite upward trend. Why are international students so important? Well, for financial purposes, they are an important source of revenue. But more important, their presence on our campus reminds our native students and faculty that knowledge knows no boundaries. Since Dr. Lemansky's arrival 2.5 years ago, we have placed a higher priority on funded research with impressive results. Since 1998, extramural funding has increased by a factor of 7, with the greatest part of that growth coming in the last 2 years. All right, let's pull the camera back a little bit and take a look at the region we serve and how it has changed in the last 10 years. Between the years 2000 and 2010, the United States population grew by about 28 million people, around 10%. During that same time, the population of Texas grew by about 5 million people, a percentage increase of close to 21%. Texas also led the nation in the fastest growing segments of the population, those under 5 and those under 18. In other words, our future students. When you break down the numbers by ethnicity, you will find that Texas trailed the nation in percentage population growth among whites, blacks, American Indians, and Asians. However, when it comes to Hispanics, our growth rate was more than double than that of the nation, 37.6%. compared to 16.3%. Those of you who have calculators will notice these numbers don't add up to 100%. That's because with the 2010 census makes it possible to count yourself in more than one category. And in fact, if you look at our enrollment reports, you will see that by far the most rapidly growing segment of our population, our student population, is other. Well, I'm not going to confuse you with more numbers, but maybe just a few. But I would point out that the Hispanic population of Dallas County, which is, of course, our largest feeder county, exceeded the growth rate for that of the state as a whole, 38.3% compared to 37.6% for the state of Texas. How about other dimensions of growth? Well, Texas led the nation in residents who speak a language other than English at home, 33.6% compared to 19.6%. But we trail the nation in terms of the percentage of residents who hold either a high school diploma or those who hold a bachelor's degree or higher. We come in a little more than 25% compared to 27.5% for the nation as a whole. I share these figures with you for two reasons. First, when considering our growth, it is important to note that we are growing not so that we can make up for budget cuts or because size alone matters. We are growing because our state is growing, because our region is growing, and because our nation is growing. And the number of students seeking the opportunities that only a college education can provide is growing. As a public institution, our first and highest obligation is to serve the common good. When our region grows, we must grow in tandem or renounce the sacred trust inherent in our mission. The second point is this. While the enrollment growth we are experiencing is a direct reflection of the population growth of our region, we are not just serving more students, we are serving students who are very different from those who enrolled in Professor Mayo's college, or even from those whom many of you are teaching when you entered this profession. Today's students are no less capable than those of previous generations. They are, in fact, much more technologically adept. Having been raised in an environment in which information is never more than a click or two away, they are curious and they are impatient. For them, acquiring content is easy. The challenge in teaching them is to guide them how to aggregate, analyze, and derive meaning from that content. There's no Google search for that. There are other profound differences in today's students when compared to those of previous eras. Today's students are much more likely to come from families where English is not spoken at home. They are much more likely to come from economically disadvantaged backgrounds. They are much less likely to have ever read a book from cover to cover while in high school. Yet because they define their social circle by the number of friends they have on Facebook, rather than by those with whom they share common socioeconomic backgrounds, they are in many ways more comfortable with the increasing diversity of our state and nation than are their parents. Well-managed growth is indeed our mandate, but this growth presents itself in multiple dimensions. One has to do with numbers. To accommodate rising enrollments, we have become more creative and responsive in terms of scheduling, section sizes, delivery formats, and on and on and on. But a parallel dimension of growth is complexity. Not just more students, but different kinds of students with different mindsets, whose perspectives and thought processes have been fashioned by technology, by cultural and social diversity, by changing demographics, and by a thousand other influences that few of us, at least those of us over 40, and I see a few of my peers in the room, could have imagined when we entered our profession. Successfully managing growth, therefore, requires first that we acknowledge that the environment within which higher education occurs is not just getting bigger, it is becoming increasingly multifaceted and dynamic. To oversimplify this complexity is a grave mistake. Responding to the growth imperative that lies at the heart of our mission requires that we act proactively and creatively to the needs of our region, as well as to the rapidly changing character of our students. And remember that as we grow, not only do we get bigger, we also get better. Growth brings with it additional resources and therefore the opportunity to achieve higher quality, as long as it is done in the right way and for the right reasons. I invite you to imagine with me a university that is bigger and better tomorrow than it is today, with more top-performing students, more distinguished faculty, more world-class facilities. A university that is, in short, more effective in carrying out its mission of changing the face of a region and of a world through education. Getting there won't be easy. We will have to continually rethink the way that we do business, the way we teach our students, the way that we conduct research, plan schedules, and perform a thousand other tasks that, in fact, will never become routine in the ever-changing environment within which we work. I used to work with a registrar at another institution, and every fall she would say, "When are we going to have a normal semester?" Well, the answer is, not yet. As we challenge our students to achieve at the highest level, we must challenge ourselves as well. Our vision of the future is limited not by the external constraints imposed upon us, but rather only by the limitations of our own imaginations, which we impose upon ourselves. Well, breaking boundaries is part of what we are, who we are, and part of what we have always been. In the preface to the 1905 catalog of East Texas Normal College, Professor Mayo included a description of the governance structure of this institution. I've shared this before with some of our students and with some of you. If you haven't read it, it's a great characterization of our founder's brash, forward-looking, and innovative spirit. Think of these words as a declaration of the university's independence to chart its own course toward the future. Let me share them with you. Board of Regents, none. We use no names of distinguished politicians or other men of high-sounding titles for mere catch traps. Board of Trustees, none. No sets of dignitaries to hold us in suspense for weeks or months when we wish to make the slightest change or needed improvement. Board of Directors, none. We are not check-reined by such a body of men who know far less about schoolwork than about the business they follow, and who are ever ready to suggest ideas prevailing, quote, when I went to school. Board of Visitors, everybody who desires to attend college or who has a son, a daughter, or a friend anxious to acquire, under the most favorable conditions, a general practical education at a minimum outlay of time and money. As we embark upon a new semester and a new era, let us be inspired by Professor Mayo's iconoclastic spirit. This institution was created to do things differently and to do them better. Let us bequeath to the coming generation of Lions the same spirit of restless innovation that Professor Mayo has bequeathed to us. Let me close today by announcing a change in the format of our university community updates this spring. As you know, each semester I have scheduled two or three university-wide gatherings in which I share news and offer observations on where we are and where we are headed as a university. Given our technological capabilities, I've realized, finally, that much of this information can be disseminated without having to call you together as a group. Therefore, this spring, I'll be launching a blog where I will post information and analysis about our current goings-on around the university, which will be accessible in 24/7 real time. In place of the university community updates, I'll be hosting a series of discussion forums on current topics and themes. Themes that affect us directly here at A&M Commerce, as well as broader themes that affect higher education. I'll announce the topics for these forums well in advance and offer materials and insights that you may wish to review ahead of time. When we come together, I'll offer some opening remarks, and then I'd like to have a robust give and take. I sincerely want communication to flow in both directions, and at these events, I look forward to stimulating conversation. Well, thank all of you for being here today and every day. You are what make this university great. Thank you for all that you do. I wish you a great spring semester.